If I'm informed one's just joining us this morning, it is KLDI in Laramie.
Zero, GMS. Yeah, you buy it up front, buddy. New Art, I'm so glad to have Mr. Watson on. This is from Phoenix, Arizona. I've been receiving the Sosmo watch for 2 years now, and I've got to tell you, it's the most well-done, concise, easy-to-read, and reference quake activity of any publication I've ever seen. The Sosmo Watch is an excellent publication, very reasonably priced for the amount of accurate information on the subject. I'm very proud to receive it and share it with others. Many people become less apathetic about the subject of earthquakes after reviewing a couple of these newsletters in which they can see the activity increasing. The publication is a most sobering awakening for many of the unlearned on the subject of seismic activity. If it weren't for this great newsletter, we would never know about most of the earthquakes because the media seems to be burying these events further and further when they do report them. Unless there is massive death and casualty of property loss, they gloss over them as though they don't matter. Thank you, Charles, for Sosmo Watch, and you are for having this kind of guest on your program. A consulting geologist, Charles Watson. Charles, that was a lot to wait through. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
That's quite a testimonial for you.
Yeah, we've got a lot of customers.
All right. Here's what, and I want to follow up on that. That's what I've noted, Charles. I've been disgusted. These are major events that have been occurring, and we're going to discuss some of them. But what about the press? How in the world? I called you. That's how we got in contact. When that big earthquake occurred in the Pacific, I called Charles for the first time, and I said, look, am I nuts, or is this a major geologic event that's not being reported by the press? Is that about the way we began the conversation?
That's right.
And so, what about it? Tell him. Am I crazy or what?
No, I was pretty appalled with the way the major news media groups handled this. This was a major quake. This was what I call the monster quake.
Yeah.
We don't get many of these. And I got in the business because I get goosebumps and I just jump up and down when these things happen. This is what makes me tick. I like earthquakes are what I do. When we get big quakes like this, I just go bananas. I'm gifted where I can get on the internet and make a bunch of phone calls. I've been in the business long enough where I know a lot of people and start chasing down the leads on what these quakes mean and what they do, and I write about it and try to publish it so that people can see it.
So why is the mass media, which has reported in the past on quakes of far less magnitude, ignoring? Why is the mass media suddenly ignoring these major events? What's going on here, Charles?
I'm not sure. I really don't know, but it's kind of silly that when you get a quake of this magnitude that they don't report it. They did report the Coral Island quake. I saw that one on CNN.
Indeed, they did.
Yeah, and it lasted for about 2 hours or 3 hours on.
And then just went away.
Yeah, and it was a quick little blur, but it happened in Russia and on this little island, and there might be some damage. And, oh, it was felt in Japan. And I think that's what it was all about, was a lot of Americans feel that, you know, we're akin to the Japanese, and that there's if it would affect them, affects us. Well, that's true, but there's also the rest of the world, you know, like Indonesia or South America or, you know, Seattle. So, to me, I think that there's just so much news media out there that sometimes they lose track of what's important, whether it be the New Hampshire primary or an 8.2. To me, I feel the 8.2 gets more votes.
Well, I know it would from you. It ought to get at least some votes, and because there's a big controversy going on about New Hampshire, Buchanan, not all other news of importance ought to be swamped and swept under the rug. And that's essentially what they did. The Indonesia earthquake, for example.
This was a monster, Art. I mean, and yet it wasn't covered at all. It was in my local paper, the Reno Gazette Journal. It was in the way back page. There was a little blurb, a couple columns large, and they showed a little map. And they didn't even have the epicenter in the right spot.
It was near New Guinea, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was on the north coast of Irinjaya, which is the western half of New Guinea.
What happened? Can you tell the folks out there? I mean, what did this quake do?
Well, it was a subduction zone kind of earthquake. A subduction zone is where one plate slides underneath another, or is forced under another, and this one, it was a real complex movement where it jolted and then, pow, it just gave. And it was like a car that didn't quite start right. You know, where it goes pop, 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 pow, pow, pow.
Yeah, right.
And you could see the aftershocks just flying. There were four magnitude sixes. There's been 476 total quakes in the first 48 hours.
Holy mackerel. How many?
476, magnitude 4 or greater. There were 26 magnitude 5. The people on the ground said the ground was a constant motion. It was near chaos or panic on this little island called Bayak, which was, it took the brunt of the jolt. And the surrounding island of New Guinea was just wiped out. The tsunami heights are 10 meters tall. That's about 33 feet.
Oh, my God.
Which just washed up on the shore, just swept it like a broom, is what the AP people call it. But this was a monster event. 600 homes dragged out to sea. Bridges were just wiped out.
You see, fine, it makes the Associated Press, but an event of that magnitude, granted, not a major industrialized country, but such a gigantic geologic event that to ignore it, essentially ignore it, I watched for 24 hours after the event. I watched CNN, my wife, faithfully being my producer, glued herself to CNN, couldn't find one word about it, Charles.
Yeah.
How can that be?
Well, it was New Hampshire. There was Pat Buchanan. There was Dial Soap. I don't know. I didn't understand why the CNN didn't even give anything towards it. I was kind of nervous. Because Ted Turner and the whole Atlanta group is really good people. I mean, they've worked really hard to do what they've got right now. And some others, I think they've just gotten too big. You know, where they've lost track of what's important as far as news.
Okay.
And, you know, but this other quake, the one that just happened down in South America.
Yes.
The 7.5 Peruvian quake.
Now, let's discuss that a little bit.
There's another one that passed by the media.
I'll say. Now, there is some dispute about the magnitude of the quake. Some are saying it's the mid-sixes. You're reporting, and you reported, 7.5. And by the way, I passed on this to Gordon Michael Scallion.
Right.
7.5 is a major earthquake.
Yeah, they had a tsunami also. It surged up on shore and it took out a little fishing port. But it was in another remote region. It was centered off the coast. And so the actual tremors didn't cause any damage, but it was just a tsunami, and it was a localized tsunami. So it was actually a mild quake as far as the damage goes, but the amount of energy release was up in the mid-7, 7.5, according to Harvard Geophysical, which I tend to use theirs in comparison to both the University of Tokyo and the USGS. Those three, the French are kind of strange when they produce their moment magnitudes, and I kind of stick with Harvard.
All right. When Gordon Michael Scallion says the following, that I'm quite confident that in late April or as late as May 10th, we will see, referring to the West Coast, not earthquakes, not just earthquakes, his words, but tectonic plate movement. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, all these we track even microseisms down to the magnitude 1 level, okay?
Right.
I mean, that's what we show in newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And those are tectonic movements. So, but I think what Gordon means is of major proportion.
Kind of like the jump, jump, snap.
Yeah. I feel like that. Well, I'm beginning to become a believer in seismic windows, Art, which is what are the times in which earthquakes occur? When do they occur most?
Well, how does a geologist come to seismic windows? That's the working lingo of Gordon Michael and company.
Well, seismic windows has been around for a long time, as a scientist, I look at these and I've looked at them. Well, they give about a 50% chance that an earthquake might occur, but But when you put all the factors together, and there are about 25 to 30 physical factors which can influence an earthquake, the percentage actually increases. And Gordon uses not only those, but his own perceptive abilities and others to do this. And in order to kind of alert people, and in many of the conversations I've had with Gordon, it's really a sincere, we need to help people. We need to,
I know.
We need to really tell them that things like this could happen.
I try to tell my audience, Charles, that I'm a friend of Gordon's, and I've had as many off-air conversations with the man as I have on, and he's no different off the air than he is on. His sincerity, the reason he's doing this, the level of feeling that he has, his record of accuracy, all of this comes crashing through to me in a private conversation with him. And a lot of people, I keep feeling the need to say that to people who hear him on the air, because I have no way of knowing whether people can perceive earthquakes, but if anybody can, he can. And if anybody is sincere, it's Gordon Michael.
You know, and he's got touches with all the other leading people that do the same thing. And so he's calling Abramson, he's calling other people and checking with them, what do you feel like? And I wouldn't say all of them, but a large majority of them have some sort of tie with Gordon. And I think the network that he's building to alert people to this is, in that field is great.
All right, well, you're a geologist. And this is quite a leap for you in a lot of ways. I'm sure that you've watched Gordon carefully now over the months or years. How accurate is he?
I haven't followed his specific predictions all that well. Okay, I've been so busy. I mean, 1995 was the most productive year for large magnitude earthquakes of magnitude 6 or greater. There were 192.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Can you put that in perspective by looking at prior years?
Yeah. The last year that had anything close was 1965, and it had 164. And so this was an enormous jump in the amount of large magnitude earthquakes.
Well, there's another thing, Charles. In 1995, I watched these like a march of something or another, I don't know what, and I would call it to the attention of my audience, and I would use the word quickening. Something's quickening here. We're having more earthquakes, and I would inevitably get back to saying, oh, no, we're not. We're just paying more attention to them. They're in the media more. We're not having more earthquakes. They've been occurring since time began. There are no more earthquakes now than there ever have been. That's not true, is it?
No. Oh, seriously not. No. There have been more earthquakes in 1995, magnitude 6.0 or greater, than any time recorded by instruments.
All right, look, I'm holding you over, but I want you to give out the number where people could order Seismo Facts Alert Bulletins or your newsletter.
Right.
Plug it. Do it.
Yeah. Well, the number is 1-800-852-2960. Now, it's just a small message phone. I know it's going to be inundated any moment, but
yes, it is.
You can also write to...
No, give the number again.
Okay, yeah. It's 1-800-852-2960.
Right, and on, what do you want from people there?
Just their name and address, if they would like to receive the mailing information, and if they have a fax number, just go ahead and send... Or give the fax number they'd like. We'll send them a trial issue. And,
oh, really?
And a trial fax alert. And
oh.
If they like what they see, they can...
They can order from
they
there.
They can order it. As far as
all right, listen, we're coming up on the top of the hour. You may want to turn off the ringer if you get a chance during the news here.
Yeah.
On that.
And they're starting to call.
Right, that's right. Just let them go to town. So, Charles, hold on. We'll be right back to you after the news. Charles Watson, the producer of Seismo Watch, a consulting geologist, back after the news.
1-800-618-8255, east of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033, 1-800-825-5033, this is the CBC Radio. network.
It absolutely is. Good morning, everybody. Friday night, Saturday morning, a vacation from politics. Can you handle it? Charles Watson is my president. How long has it been going on? How long have you been talking with Gordon?
Gordon contacted me in January of 1995, just before, I think, the COVID break.
Yes.
Yeah. He just got off a set from Encounters, I believe, what he said, and somebody, you know, he was talking about earthquakes and large magnitudes or something.
I remember that program, yes.
And he, and somebody said, have you seen this? And they handed him my newsletter, and which is what it is. It's a collection of seismic of maps showing the epicenters for different regions around the country, and it's got a world map and so on and so forth. It's really comprehensive. But Gordon just said, "This is great. I got to call this guy and, you know, what's how it started."
Well, he's a smart cookie. Well, I mean, in more ways than one, he's a very smart cookie. So I'm not surprised that he called you. I did the same thing. I was so impressed with the, I guess, down-to-earth way you present this information when a quake occurs.
Well, you know, I have to, because since I write for so many newspapers, our graphics are seen by about 7 million people a week, every week. And so there's a variety of audiences out there for newspapers, and so they tell me, tone it down, don't be so scientific. And but it's really for the betterment of the public that, you know, I write so briefly. And what we do is we just do it in kind of a bullet item that a quake occurred here.
Sure.
Try to give a little bit of seismic history behind it, you know, if it's of significance. You know, when we're talking about quakes in California, there's, you know, in Southern California, they're literally, like last week, there were 376 plus magnitude 1.
All right, there's where I want to stop you and ask you, what in the world is going on at Mammoth Lakes? Now, I get pages and pages of earthquakes, this what do they call swarming earthquakes, at Mammoth Lakes, and then all of a sudden USGS issued some sort of alert about volcanic activity. What can you tell us about what's going on there?
Mammoth Lakes is just down the road for me. I'm very familiar with what goes on down there. I know the people personally at the USGS that are studying it. They've got laser telemetry. They've got monitors of the yin-yang down there. They know this thing better than any other thing, any other volcano on the planet, it seems like. This is a really well-monitored site. They've got tons of equipment. Anyway, but all that aside is that earthquake bursts or surges or swarms that occurred like the one we just had a couple weeks ago are not uncommon for Mammoth Lake. It is a relatively active place for microseismicity. And what happens is that because it's a volcano, all right, and it hasn't erupted for 700,000 years.
Right? 700,000 years?
Yeah, it went off in a big bang 700,000 years ago, and it laid volcanic ash all the way to New Jersey, okay?
Oh my God, really?
Oh, it was the Krakatoa of California. So, and don't quote me on that one, right? But it was a large quake, I mean, a large eruption.
This is not a newspaper. You said what you just said, and so it's radio,
well,
it went out.
Well, no, it's
the Krakatoa of California.
It's the Long Valley Caldera. It's an active volcano. The Long Valley ashfall is a marker horizon throughout geologic time.
What happened 700,000 years ago? Ash to New Jersey.
It's kind of like Mount St. Helens, but in a much more big way. It blew its top, and if you ever go to Mammoth, you'll see that Long Valley is a circular thing. It's a basin about 11 miles across, and it sits on top, right next to the Sierra Nevada. So it's really spectacular. Devil's Profile there. Yosemite's not far. There's a couple ski resorts there. I mean, it's a beautiful place. But it's also very tectonically and volcanically active. And so, because it's got the magma that's not too far down, it's about 7 kilometers, 8 kilometers, and it's kind of just sitting there, and it's not doing anything. It's you might say that it's moving upwards, but it's going so slow that it's not really doing much. But that's the heat engine. And so you've got all this hot water that's circulating around, and sometimes that hot water will burst through cracks and cause little microseisms to happen. And sometimes you even get a little bit of diking or magma diking, and that also causes some earthquakes. So what they had was a flurry of 270 something quakes, magnitude greater than plus one, okay? And there were five 3.0s, and I think just this last week there's been a couple more 3.0s. So
let me stop you and ask you.
Right.
If this event that occurred 700,000 years ago, mind-blowing time, were to occur today,
what would that do? It would disrupt life as you know it for that area. It'd be a major volcanic eruption like what you saw down at Pinatubo, down in the Philippines. Back there in whatever year that was, 1990.
Yeah, is such an event possible?
Yes, it is. It's not likely in the near future, though. That thing is so heavily monitored that, you know, every time a cat farts, they know it. So it's really well monitored. They've got the CO2 thing under control. They know where it's coming from, and that's not a big deal. I mean, volcanoes release gases.
Yeah.
And sometimes they come up places where they haven't come up before. And just because gases are gases, they come up through cracks or fissures or cracks. And
well, you said it's a volcano, but it's really not. It's not a volcano in the sense of great big mountain volcano, is it?
No, it blew its top, but it just sits on the east side of the Sierras, which is a major fault zone. It's the Eastern Sierra frontal fault zone, as they call it. And in the Owens Valley 8.0 quake was there in 1872. I mean, that was a monstrous quake. It was, and that's not far from you, by the way, Art.
Great.
There's another one called the Amargosa Valley Fault, which runs right through.
That's right. Oh, I know. Yeah. And you say it runs right through Pahrump?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't even know if I wanted to hear that.
And then there's the Death Valley Fault Zone, which is just over the hill from you. So
great.
They're capable of very large magnitude quakes.
Oh, great. See, I think of my area as seismologically safe.
Yeah, you see?
I shouldn't, huh?
Well, I think that's what people like Gordon is doing, and what I'm trying to do is, the idea is that if you live in earthquake-prone areas, you need to be informed. And that's what my publications do. They inform the public of the activity, keeps it in the forefront of your mind on a weekly basis that earthquakes do occur. It's just like watching the weather. Are you going to put a jacket on, or are you going to put your preparedness packet in the car?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talk about those people that were in the Loma Prieta earthquake in San Francisco or Northridge, and all the freeways came down, and they're stuck in their car between freeways. But they've got their preparedness packet, they've got, you know, 24 hours, 72 hours worth of food or water, and so, you know, they finally get off out of the car, and everything's okay within that time.
Charles, have you ever been in an earthquake?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Real exhilarating.
I'll tell you the one story of my involvement in an earthquake. I lived on the island of Okinawa for the better part of a decade, Charles, and I worked for a radio station there, KSBK in Naha, Okinawa. And we were way up I worked for a Japanese company, and my boss was Japanese, and I worked way up in a tall building in Naha, Okinawa, which is south of Japan, south a little west of Japan and east of China, and is in, of course, directly in the Ring of Fire. And one day I was on the air, and we had these old RCA ribbon microphones that were suspended from the ceiling by wires, a tripod of wires, and the microphone would come right down in front of you. And one day, right in the middle of my program, we had a most serious earthquake. I mean, the building was going back and forth and back and forth. And this microphone went from in front of me, banged up against the wall, I mean, an impossible thing, and took a swing back toward me. Fortunately, I ducked or it would have knocked out all my front teeth. And I hit the floor, and the building was rolling, and I thought she was going to come down on top of me. It was one of the most terrifying events in my whole life. I had never felt so helpless and utterly in the hand of God. I mean, it was just like, if this keeps going, it's all over, and I knew it.
Yeah, yeah, and if you're in a building where you have things around you that can fall, that can be really scary. I mean, these things can take you out.
Really scary understates what I felt. Now, to you, you study it. If you're in the middle of it, it's, the word you use is exhilarating.
Well, for example, I was working in the San Francisco Bay Area when the Morgan Hill earthquake happened, and that was a 5.9 to 6.1 earthquake, and I felt the ground starting to tremble. The P waves come through, and I knew exactly what it was going to be.
Wait, what's a P wave?
That's the first initial wave that hit. They're the faster waves. They're a whole bunch of different.
So it doesn't mean what you do when you feel it.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And so I ran outside and standing next to this tilt-up office complex building, and there was some railroad tracks. And sure enough, here comes the seismic wave down the railroad track, and I could see the track rise and fall.
Oh, no.
And rise and fall as each wave passed by. And then as they passed by me, it was almost like I was surfing. And we were about 50 miles, maybe 60 miles from the epicenter. And
as a geologist, you're sort of just passionately standing there going, cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had my hand on the building, and looking over, there was this huge cement thing where they make concrete, and this big tower, and I was watching this thing oscillate and making sure my truck wasn't in its way. But it was, and then I was up in Humboldt County in 1980 when they had a 7+ earthquake up there, and that was they had a freeway come down and a lot of damage, and we were going through Humboldt County, California.
Yes, I know the area. In fact, there are so many people smoking pot there, it's a wonder that anybody even notices.
It is a foggy place.
Yeah. Listen, getting serious again, what Gordon is calling for is truly frightening. The magnitudes of earthquakes, what he's calling for, truly are frightening. And we're here at the bottom of the hour again. But do you tend to think that Gordon is going to be correct when he talks about near-term serious earth movement on the West Coast?
I believe it can be possible, and I want to talk to you about that more.
All right.
Deep quakes.
I want to talk about deep quakes, and we're going to take calls. Charles Watson, a consulting geologist, is my guest. You're listening to a Friday night, Saturday morning, Coast to Coast AM. Up to 29% off the regular prices. That's 1-800-562-8283. Once again, 24 hours a day, 1-800-562-8283. Back now to Charles Watson in Reno, Nevada. He is a consulting geologist who knows Gordon Michael Scallion. Charles.
What?
Okay. Let's, for a second, talk deep earthquakes. When I talked to you the other day, I recalled a news story, and fortunately, the news organizations, or at least the radio news organizations, which are better than television, did cover the South American quake. I'm trying to remember where it was, Ecuador possibly, where there was this incredibly deep earthquake. Now, most quakes occur near the surface or 33 kilometers down or not very far from the surface compared to what occurred. What was that quake? How deep was it? What was it?
You're referring to the Bolivia quake.
Thank you, Bolivia.
In June of 94.
Right.
And it measured 8.3, and it occurred at a depth of 650 kilometers, which is about 410 miles.
410 miles inside the Earth.
And that quake was felt in Toronto, Canada.
That's right. That's what I remember about it. How can a quake occur that deep in the earth? Now, my understanding, I guess I don't understand. I thought plate tectonics and all the rest of it was fairly close to the surface of the earth. So explain to me, if you can, how a quake can occur that far down where they're... Well, I don't even know what's supposed to be in the Earth that far. What's down there?
Well, just real briefly, earthquakes happen because something brittle breaks. Okay, like the ground, it suddenly gives.
Right.
That's a brittle break. When you go into subduction zones, like what happens in off the coast of South America,
mm-hmm.
there are two plates, one plate is sliding underneath another. It's being forced into the interior of the Earth. And so as it's going down, it's generating earthquakes as it goes down. But then the Earth gets awfully hot, and the plate heats up, and then it becomes kind of plasticky, and then it stops producing earthquakes. And that general range in which they stop producing the tectonic earthquakes or the brittle break is about 250 to 350 kilometers deep. And then there's this gap for the next 200 kilometers, and all of a sudden earthquakes start happening again. And what scientists are believing are these other earthquakes are occurring from is it's all the crystals that are within that plate that's being forced down there, all of a sudden they're getting squished and they got to change into a different shape. Like if you squeeze coal, you can make diamonds.
Right.
You're making just something large into something small, and all the crystal lattices all of a sudden start shifting, and boom, if you get a big enough piece of plate to shift all at once to make this crystal phase change, is what they call it,
right.
You can make these earthquakes real deep. But this quake was a different kind of animal. It did not follow the same kind of pattern that the crystal phase change models predicted. And so this is a mystery. This is where science hasn't quite figured out what's going on with this quake. This was a major quake. It had a major rupture. The rupture was actually perpendicular to the actual subduction slab. And that's getting kind of technical for everybody, but it's a very complex earthquake, and people just the scientists aren't quite sure why something like that large can occur that deep.
And also, normally, you send out the seismal facts alerts, which I find incredibly informative, but they show a radius of the earthquake where it's felt and so forth. But for a South American earthquake to be felt in Toronto, Canada, seems impossible to me.
Well, it was also because it was so deep, okay? You know, when the source is starting out all the way down there, the waves have a lot easier mechanisms to get further away a lot quicker, and so with enough velocity. And so then you can actually start feeling things like that when they get farther away.
But if it was a gigantic event deep in the Earth, the potential effect would be incredible in terms of, the circles that you draw for these earthquakes.
Well, the newsletter is actually the companion to the facts alert, okay? So the facts alert is just to tell you that it happened.
Right.
And
the newsletter is to explain it.
Right. And the newsletter is, it goes into more depth. It's after a little bit more information has come down the pike. And then the government will issue something 3 or 4 months later, okay? After they've analyzed it to death and they've got all the numbers down and blah, blah, blah. They'll finally release, you know, what they say. Okay, here's the first quake happened back in August. And for us, that's not fast enough. We work in a time scale that we want to know what happened yesterday. CNN News, we just work in a frame that if an earthquake happens in Greece, that we want to know about it.
How many newspapers do you write for?
27.
27 newspapers.
Right. We have the individual SeismoWatch graphic, which is a local epicenter map for that region showing the seismic activity. And I can put notable events or historic stuff or terms and things like that.
Without mentioning any specific newspapers or people, do they come to you and say, look, Charles, you've got to tone this stuff down. You're going to scare people?
I had one 2 weeks ago call me on that, one in the San Francisco Bay Area that did that, yeah.
Are you talking to everybody in San Francisco right now?
That's all right. They know. They know who I am. But the thing is that, and then, in fact, I even had to not stop. I had to say to one newspaper down in Southern California, I'm sorry, but you know, this isn't going to work. I cannot portray that information to the public in that way. And we just severed our relationship. I think that I have an excellent product, and I think that what I do is it's toned down enough for even a sixth grader. I mean, I give talks at local schools here in Reno about earthquakes. I'm on the state seismic safety commission. So I've got it down on how to tell people about this. And
that's what I'm enjoying about you right now.
Yeah.
That I can seem to understand what it is you're saying.
Well, it's a hard science because there's a lot of physics and a lot of information that can be potentially scary to a lot of people. And yet, when you look at it happening as frequently as it does on the planet as a whole, it makes it seem a little less terrifying.
Let's see if we can make less terrifying what Gordon says is coming.
Well, this is what Gordon and I talked about back in the winter last year, is that deep earthquakes have a potential to occur almost anywhere. You take away the brittle surface tectonic model,
right,
and then you have the mantle, which is underneath all that, and that can generate earthquakes. We had a subduction zone off the coast of North America 30 million years ago, and it was actively producing volcanoes that were along the coast. You could, Crater Lake, Clear Lake. There was a couple in the Bay Area and so on and so forth. But in all this is that slab, that Fairlawn plate that they called it, is still under North America. Now, has it gone through all those mineral transformations that would have satisfied those Bolivia-type quakes or not? Now, I was talking to a gentleman back in Northwestern University the other day, and he was saying that he's got a way to see what that plate looks like under the continent. It's called seismic tomography.
Wow.
And it's putting together a lot of high-speed computers as the waves pass through the Earth, and they triangulate, and they kind of get an image.
Let me run past you one of the wilder things that Gordon has talked about, I thought. The traditional thinking, there's a couple of schools of thought on what's at the core of the Earth. Magma, or I heard some recent newscasts over the last year or two that said solid iron. There's quite a difference, magma or solid iron, one of the two. Gordon has had visions of magma in the Earth, which is beginning to displace, causing what he believes to be coming, these major geologic events that he believes to be coming. And in effect, as it displaces, if you can think of a spinning ball, our Earth, he's actually saying it's beginning to set up a kind of a wobble. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I spent hours, literally hours, talking to Gordon about possibilities. I did a lot of research for free because I needed to understand the...
Is that within the realm of possibility? I mean, none of us, I guess, really knows.
That's why I mentioned the Bolivia quake, is because it's a mystery. It's a different kind of animal that scientists don't understand quite the mechanism that made it happen. And so, can something like that happen under North America? It's entirely possible, but it may be so remote that it could not happen, or it could happen, who knows? I don't do predictions, okay? I'm just trying to put it out there that everybody else can make up their mind on what the information tells them.
All right. Well, Gordon has predicted that you're familiar, I know, with this four-quake scenario.
Right.
While what just occurred doesn't quite match the Indian Ocean, it's very close. And is such a four-quake scenario ending up on the west coast of America with magnitude he talks about possible or unlikely?
It is possible.
Because, he said that it's pretty close. When you look from Japan down to where this major quake occurred in the Pacific, and then over, you bring yourself over to South America, it's kind of like the hair on the back of my neck stands up when I follow Gordon and I follow you.
Well, and I follow a lot of other predictors too. Jim Berglund and Jack Peskin and other people that have these seismic windows and places and times in which earthquakes could happen. And Gordon came up with the four quake scenario one. And every time, you know, they start making that box around the quote unquote ring of fire, I you know, my eyebrows perk up and I just look for it. I don't, you know, I know the possibilities are there, and I know that it could happen. So I just watch. And so that if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, well, when's the next cycle going to start?
Precisely. So you say you have come to become a believer in this window that's being talked about.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There is a clear seismic window in which earthquakes occur. And it's just the likelihood of a quake happening. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen. It just means that the likelihood of a quake occurring during a certain period of time is there.
Okay, well, I know how Gordon comes up with his windows. He does so by the visions that he has. How does a geologist like yourself come to agree? Is it simply study and belief by demonstration, or...
Well, geologists rarely agree on anything. It just doesn't happen. But it's about how to look at the evidence and see what's there. We have a web page in which we're going to put up some information on that in the near future. I'd probably rather not go into a lot of that depth because it involves like 25 different things. And it's
well, unless you have an actual web location you can give out.
It's www.seismowatch.com. And there's a dash between
slow that down a little.
Oh, okay. www.seismo, which is seismo-watch.com. C-O-M.
And on there will be what?
It's got some examples of our newsletter. It's got some SeismoWatch or SeismoFacts alerts. It tells a little bit about what SeismoWatch is all about. It's very in the beginning stage. Under construction is the term.
Well, I wonder if you know what you've gotten yourself into. In other words, you said you would be willing to give people a free example of SeismoWatch.
Oh, yeah.
For just calling that number that you gave out. And are you going to be able to handle this kind of volume?
Oh, you know, what I'd really like to offer is the back issue with the complete set for the listing of 1995 earthquakes, magnitude 6.0 or greater.
Really?
Yeah. It's $3. And let me just make sure what volume it is here so that everybody can... We get that down. It's volume 4, number 3.
Volume 4, number 3, all right. And they can also get a free example of SeismoWatch.
Yeah, and in that, what there is, there's an order form to get that. If you want to get a complete subscription, there's also the listing of 1995 earthquakes. I squished them down pretty small in order to get them all on one page. But but there's a complete listing. They're separated by month, and there's a total, by month. Until the, you know, April, August,
right,
and October were the big months.
All right, what's the number?
The telephone number is 1-800-852-2960. And I got to tell you, it's awfully busy right now, so if all the people are calling and they're getting a busy signal, you might want to wait until an off time like tomorrow or something and give it a buzz.
Now, wait till you see what you're getting into.
No, that issue is a really good issue.
Oh, I understand. I just in terms of volume, you know not what's doing, but you will. All right, I would like to take calls from the folks, since you're kind of like Mr. Earthquake, and you can seem to explain things in language that people understand. I'd like to give the audience a chance to ask questions. Are you up for that?
Yeah, oh, sure.
Okay, cool. Hold on. Charles Watson, a consulting geologist, is my guest, and now we really are going to open the phones. Obviously not much time at the top of the hour, but next hour we will lay heavily on the phones. Here are the numbers. If you are a first-time caller to the program, it's area code 702-727-1222. This really is a chance to ask somebody who knows. 702-727-1222. The wildcard lines... Our area code 702 727 1-800-625-702-727-1295. West of the Rockies, toll free. It's 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. Now, let's see what we can do for the folks, Charles. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Charles Watson. Hello.
Yes, hi, Art. Hi, Charles. I've been really fascinated with your show tonight. I do have two questions. The first one is that quake that was south of Indonesia. I don't understand the geographical parameters of the Ring of Fire.
All right, so what is the Ring of Fire is the first question, and what else, ma'am?
Well, I understand waterproof merchandise, all that, but when Michael Scallion and you, Charles Watson, speak, what are you suggesting we do?
That's fine. What is the Ring of Fire, first of all?
The Ring of Fire is just the, if you take the Pacific, it's just the margin of the Pacific. Okay, so you'd look at Japan and Philippines and New Guinea and so on and so forth on the west. And then on the east would be North America and South America. And that's basically what they call the Ring of Fire.
Then on up through Alaska.
Yeah, Alaska and Seattle. And, right. And it goes all the way around.
All right.
As far as, you know, what I could suggest,
that's right.
I mean, the preparedness is that I don't know if you're under one of these 8.5s. I'm not sure exactly what you can do, and we might want to call the people down there in New Guinea and ask them how it felt. But I think that the idea would be to just have as much preparedness products as you can have. You know, like flashlights, food and water for a number of days.
But if you're roughly near the epicenter of an 8.5, it's between legs and. Tucker up because it's goodbye time. So, but that is just, of course, that's fate. But a lot of people will be affected by lesser degrees, and then you're talking about water and food.
But, you know, if you're in the mechanical area, like in downtown Los Angeles or something like that, or Salt Lake City or something, if you're in a building, that's a whole different story, and you just have to hang on for the ride. Outside, I would say open your eyes, look around, because there's nothing that's going to hurt you unless you're standing by cliff.
One of my deepest, darkest fears is something we'll talk a little bit about when we come back. I have this horrible, horrible fear of the earth opening up and swallowing me up. I mean, that's in the movies, but of course, nothing like that in real life can happen.
ASAP.
We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
WTAZ, Bolton, New York.
All right, we pretty much cleaned out every house on this block. All right, this is the last house, and we're...
Look at... Well, you know, like in the movie where the big crack opens and people are tumbling in?
Yeah, that's usually Hollywood.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But, you know, there are things like liquefaction, and there have been... You know, faults that have created big gaps that things fall in. There was the 1906 San Francisco quake. Apparently, some cow fell in up near Point Reyes, and which is north of San Francisco.
Is this O'Leary's cow or something?
Yeah, there's some story that goes along with this, but I think that people have poo-pooed this. But it's a notable story. I think there's a plaque up there that describes it.
So a cow fell in, a talk show host could fall in.
Are you saying there's something of relation there?
Oh, please.
No.
I'm getting enough faxes already. Here's one for you. Does Charles have an opinion about the French bomb tests and quakes? There's a lot of people that talk about French. You know, they were testing like crazy.
Right.
And actually, we were having a lot of earthquakes in Marietta.
Well, what we do is those do generate earthquakes. Okay.
And they Excuse me, they do?
Oh, yeah, it's a blast. It's a high energy blast. And so it will be recorded as a quake. And so we list the magnitude that detonation generated. And so I think the largest one they generated was a 5.6. Relatively a firecracker compared to what the Chinese do on a routine basis.
Except, what about this question? Now, a 5.6 is a little firecracker, but can one event trigger another event?
Blasts are really high energy, and they don't carry a lot of oomph with it. There's nothing to do that.
So unless you put it in exactly the wrong place.
For example, back in the 60s, the 50s and 60s, when they were doing nuclear detonations down in the test site in southern Nevada, they were exploding underground, and there were some faults within the test site that did rupture and cause significant displacement.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, they're spectacular. I've seen some photographs.
Really? Yeah. The reason I asked about that is because, you see, that's not far from where they plan on storing all this nuclear waste for the next gazillion million years.
Well, you could say, well, they've, you know, got the faults to move, and so therefore they're stabilized. So.
Would you say that?
I haven't been there, so I really don't know.
All right, one more, and then it's to the phones, because I promised everybody, and they're all ringing. I thought tectonic plate movement is the technical description of an earthquake. Is Gordon referring to something else now when he says not just earthquakes, but serious tectonic movement? Can you delineate in any way the difference for us, or is there a difference, or what?
Yeah, well, there isn't a difference. The tectonic movement is an earthquake. That's what I tried to say. Even a microseismic of magnitude 1 is a tectonic movement.
So then what do you think he meant? Because that was
I think he left off the adjective, which would be a significant tectonic movement. But that's what Gordon tries to let people know about, or profess to know, so that he probably was relating, you know, that a significant tectonic event would occur, but I don't want to put any words in good mouth.
All right, very good. Well, those were his words, so I would also agree with you. That's probably what he meant. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Charles Watson in Reno. Hello.
Hello.
Where are you, sir?
I'm sorry?
Where are you?
Oh, I'm in Montgomery, Alabama.
All right. Got a question?
Yeah, I was wanting to ask him about supposedly I've heard that there's a fault line, right along the part of Alabama to the west of it, that I was wondering about whether there was any. I've heard that there was going to be some action.
No, I know it's a good question. We concentrate so heavily on the Ring of Fire, Charles, that we may not, for example, in the middle part of the country, there's this horrible little possibility that we'll talk about, and then his question about Alabama. It's an unlikely place. Could it be?
Oh, yeah. Alabama has a definite seismic belt that runs through it. It's kind of subdivided into a couple categories, but it's the tail end of the Appalachians that come down towards Birmingham. In fact, Birmingham was rocked back in 1916 by a 5.1 quake. And that was near Irondale. There's, like, South Carolina's got a couple different seismic belts that run through there. The Appalachians, the coastal plains, and then right along the coast. And Charleston, of course, was rocked back in the 1800s by a major quake.
Now let's talk about another rock and roll event, and that was in the middle part of the country. And the story goes that the Mississippi River ran backwards. True story?
Well, undoubtedly, it probably did all kinds of crazy things. When you get 3 magnitude 8s in 3 months, or less than, I think it's 47 days, that's something really significant. And you're going to get subsidence, and so lakes were created, mountains or hills were formed instantly. Subsidence was intense.
What is subsidence?
Subsidence is where the ground sinks, or just kind of falls. You know, like if you've got it full of water saturated, the water's going to go someplace else, and the ground's going to subside. It's going to
Sounds like a different way to phrase my nightmare to me.
Well, you're actually a crack opening up, and then, you know, that you can fall into. Now, Nevada has those kind of cliffs.
Yes?
Yeah. The Dixie Valley cliff back in 64. You can go over there to the resort over there in Death Valley and look at the fault scarp. It's fairly prominent.
I'm right next to Death Valley.
Yeah, you're just over the hill.
Yeah, oh, great.
And you can see the scarp, and a scarp is it's the displacement between the two surfaces of the fault movement. And so there's some significant displacement that has occurred on that Death Valley fault zone.
Gee whiz, thanks. Now, maybe these are prophetic nightmares I'm having. Listen, here's another one. One of the arguments against the quickening, that's a term I'm sure you've heard me use, is the fact that we know of more earthquakes because there is equipment that can measure the quakes with great accuracy now. Does Charles know if the frequency and or magnitude of the quakes actually is increasing, and if so, by how much?
This is a very good question. Part of the increase of earthquake frequency for 1995 was due to the change in scale, because it's a moment magnitude scale.
Moment magnitude, can you explain that?
Probably not over the phone very well, but it's a measure of the energy release rather than it's a movement of a focal arm. It's the force that has caused that is being generated by the earthquake, by the movement of the displacement. Body wave magnitudes and surface wave magnitudes are generated by the actual seismogram that is produced by the displacement, and you can measure the wave height, you can measure the difference between the waves and generate an estimate for the amount of energy released.
So then, arguably, over the last year, there are more earthquakes, maybe more or not?
Yeah, I mean, technically, when we get down to it, there were more earthquakes in magnitude 6.0 range than had occurred in any recorded time. But that...
In any recorded time?
In any recorded time. So that... Back in 1960, the world became, the monitoring network around the world got sophisticated enough to start detecting more and more earthquakes.
Right.
At the 6.0 level and even the 5.0 level. And so there was a burst of, when you go back through the seismic records, you'll see that all of a sudden it jumped back in there's a series of jumps in which certain networks become online, and so the resolution gets better and better and better. But the truly large quakes, the 7s and 8s, are well documented in populated regions going back to, BC time. So, but the 6s, a 6 is really not a big quake, Art. And I'm going to get a lot of calls from that on from Northridge people.
Yeah.
But,
if you're sitting on top of it, it feels pretty big.
Yeah, but the damage is outward away from it is relatively minor.
Right.
If you go 30 miles Northridge, the damage, or 45 miles, let's say, the damage is a lot less severe. But Northridge occurred in a very populated area.
Exactly.
Yeah, so magnitude 6 earthquakes, it's going to shake the house a whole lot if you're 30 miles away, but you should be okay.
All right, back to the phones. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Charles Watson in Reno. Hello.
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 Yes, sir. I was curious.
Where are you?
I'm calling from Houston.
Houston, Texas, right.
Question. I wanted to get the phone number. I had a question about if there's a time frame of when these things might happen. And also the geography.
All right. Let's hit them in order. The phone number. You want phone number?
Yeah. The phone number is 1-800-852-2960, and it's just a single line message phone.
So all right. Give it again.
1-800-852-2960. Right.
All right. When he says timeline, I'm not exactly sure what he means. Timeline for what, sir?
I'm sorry, for the things. I'd heard, I think, Gordon Michael Scallion talk on a local radio show here once before, and I was curious about the geography affecting the United States and the timeline of 1996, 97,
All right, well, I can answer in terms of what Gordon is saying. Gordon, earlier today, left a message for me. If you wish to embrace this information, that in late April through May 10th, Gordon's words, we will see not just quakes, but tectonic plate movement. Now, he apparently meant very serious tectonic plate movement. So that's the timeline Gordon's talking about. Does that help you?
Right, and I was curious about the geography effect in the United States. I thought that had been mentioned, too, in terms of the western part of the United States.
Well, all right, again, you're talking about, thank you for the call, what Gordon is projecting from his visions, and he talked of things that are truly nightmare, frightening things, glass everywhere, refugees by the millions pouring out of California into, thank you very much, my area, and horrible visions of major earth changes, he calls them. And I know that you are familiar with what he predicts, Charles. Do you discuss these things with him?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do you say? Do you say, come on, Gordon?
Well, I've often tried to tone Gordon's magnitudes down. You know, if he were just to drop them an order of magnitude less, instead of saying eighths and nines, he would say sevenths and eighths, he would drum up a lot more believable audience.
Well, I don't know that he's trying to do that.
I mentioned that, then Gordon said, you know, but that's not what my visions tell me.
Exactly.
And so, I've walked through one of his visions with him. He called me up and I spent an hour and a half, 2 hours on the phone with him as he was passing through one of these things. He wanted to know what these visions that he was seeing meant to a geologist.
What does it tell? What does it tell?
It was kind of personal, and I probably should not go into it.
All right.
But it was very intense.
He has described the manner in which he sees these things to my audience.
Yeah.
And it is very personal, you're right. You know, the television screen thing with the one brighter than the other. Or he can see them as if he's backed off from Earth.
Right.
See geologic events occurring. He's become very personal.
Yeah, he's talked about seeing water flowing underground, seeing ground shaking violently, seeing different colors, seeing regions, seeing a newspaper blow by and grabbing it, trying to look for signs of dates, time.
That's right.
Geographic regions. He's done a lot of work on how to channel this, and so that he's actually a participant in the vision, and that he can see what's going on and try. But sometimes, like one of the times he called me, it was really taking him over. I mean, it was really causing him some physical distress.
And, yes, oh yes.
And anxiety.
Yes.
Very nervous and shaking. And,
yes, I've felt that from him many times when I've talked to him.
It
translates. And did it scare you?
No. I mean, it scared me for Gordon's personal health, because it seemed a very draining situation, and you mentioned these things have been going on.
He's called me, and on after these sessions, and he's worried for his own health. The people around him are worried for his health.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can believe that. I mean, no matter what else you believe, the guy is genuine. Absolutely genuine. These things are happening to him. You know, whether or not you believe they're going to come true, I guarantee if you talk to this man personally, or for that matter, listen to him on the radio, it translates, and you know it's for real for him.
Oh, then I'll talk to him the following day, and it's, yeah, the birds are singing, the snow's flying.
Yeah. Well, I'm like that myself, and I'm sure you are. I mean, you have days when the world's crashing in on you, and then you have days when things are clicking and the birds are singing, as you say, and all the rest of it. Even though you've gone through this, the mind softens the memory, I guess. All right, Charles, hold on. We'll be right back to you for the final half hour. My guest, a consulting geologist named Charles Watson, from Reno. I'm Art Bell, and this, as usual, is the unexpected. We'll be right back. It's like having the internet on the radio. Peoria's Talk Radio, News Talk 102.3 WTAZ.
Excuse me, John. I don't know who's calling so late. Hang on. Hello?
Good evening. I'm calling with some great news. You've won a fabulous prize. I'll just need your credit card number to verify some details. Then I'll tell you all about it.
They may sound friendly, but many telemarketers are not your friends. A new law from the Federal Trade Commission regulates telemarketing calls. Telemarketers may call only between 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. They must tell you that they're selling something and who's doing the selling. If it's a sweepstakes or prize promotion, they must tell you the odds of winning and that you don't have to buy anything or make a payment to win. And they're not allowed to call you back if you ask them not to.
I'm sorry, I never buy anything on the phone unless I know the company. And I don't know you. Goodbye now. Hello, John. Sorry. I'm so glad there's that new law about telemarketing calls.
The FTC reminds consumers that anyone with a phone can be a victim of a scamming telemarketer. If you have doubts about an offer, don't give your credit card or bank account number until you check it out and get it in writing. A message from the FTC.
Mayday.
Will the upcoming flu and cold season get you down?
You need Jane Jang.
Is there a natural way to feel better?
Yes, Jane Jang.
Want to have a healthier winter without side effects like drowsiness and nervousness?
Order Jane Jang today.
If you think this winter's been hard, listen to this. Jane Jang outsold all other cold remedies in Scandinavia for the past 12 years.
Taken daily at the onset of a cold, Jane Jang acts quickly, effectively, and it's affordable.
Stop your cold before it begins. Jane Jang, the natural cold and sinus remedy.
Remember, Sweden, Jane Jang, naturally.
Call the Swedish Herbal Institute today and feel better naturally this winter.
Order Sweden's best-selling cold remedy, Jane Jang, for just $12.95 plus shipping. Call 1-800-552-5211. Jane Jang is the all-natural way to avoid irritating colds and flu. Call 1-800-552-5211 before your next cold.
If you invest in the stock market, you've got to read Individual Investor magazine. Individual Investor should make you more money in the market than any other source. All we write about is great investment ideas. Every article is written from the standpoint of should you own this stock or mutual fund. It's easy to read, easy to understand. We do the work, you make the money. Here's an example. Individual Investor recommended Clinicom stock at $3.69 a share. At its high, Clinicom traded at over $25 a share. If you were an Individual Investor subscriber, you could have made a huge profit. Order 12 monthly issues of Individual Investor magazine today for only $22.95. At that price, it's a deal you can't afford to miss. Call toll-free today, 1-800-917-8400, to order your one-year subscription to Individual Investor for only $22.95. That's 1-800-917-8400. Don't delay. Call 1-800-917-8400.
Remember what college cost in the early 80s?
Tuition?
Yeah, books, typewriter, room and board, clothes.
Yeah? A bundle.
Was it worth it?
Well, of course. Every penny.
And get this. Now it's over twice what you paid.
Well, yeah, I don't have to worry about my kids' college bills for another 15 years.
Yeah, well, if costs keep hiking up and up, you'll be selling out more in just 1 year for each of your children than you spent on yourself for all 4 years of college.
How? So what do I do?
You better start saving today with U.S. Savings Bonds. They're easy to buy and afford and are guaranteed safe.
Yeah?
And savings bonds earn a treasury-based rate of interest right from the start.
Wow. Where do I find it?
At most banks. Or ask your employer about the payroll savings plan.
But whatever you do, start saving now.
You'll be
rooting for a scholarship?
Exactly.
If you keep up with the country's leading financial publications, you've probably noticed these headlines. Term life insurance rates are ready to rise. Say farewell to level insurance premiums. Grab a good deal on term insurance while you can. In 1996, prices for level premium term policies could increase from dramatically because of pending new regulations. The financial experts are urging everyone to act now to lock in the lowest possible rates. Fortunately, there's an organization called Best Quote that continually compares premiums from over 150 of the country's highest rated life insurance companies to determine the best values in term policies for the least amount of money. When you call their 24-hour toll-free number, they'll mail you a free comparison of the five policies that represent their best value for you. Best Quote can save you up to 70% on your premiums. So get a jump on all the rate increases by calling Best Quote for your free comparison right now. Call 1-800-367-3344. That's 1-800-367-3344.
News Talk 102.3 WTAZ.
On the wild card line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach our bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Here I am. Morning, everybody. My guest is Charles Watson. He is a consulting geologist in Reno, Nevada. We're talking earthquakes. And we've got another half hour to go. If you've got a question, get it in. Get on the phone. Glad to get you on with Charles. It has been a fascinating morning. And again, I want to pass this along to you. If you want a copy of this program, and I can imagine this is one you want to archive, I'm going to give you the number for that. The first 2 hours, or the last 3 hours, are all 5 hours. Bud Hopkins, and now Charles Watson. From aliens to earthquakes. The number to get a copy of the program is 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. Now, that's good 24 hours a day, including right now. Absolutely Fresh Flowers also has a 24-hour number, which is good, including right now. And I'll give that to you in a moment. Birthdays, anniversaries, special events of any sort, special days. There is no better way to, I guess, memorialize them, mark them, impress somebody, than to send her Absolutely Fresh Flowers. It is a gigantic shipment of miniature carnations. It comes in a gigantic triangular box. It's the world's best deal on flowers, folks. Name of that tune, it's the world's best deal on flowers, period. You get a little card inside with your message, your name, written in the bottom. They'll fill up the house for weeks if you treat them right. They last a long time because they come with a lot of buds. It's just a gigantic shipment. It's the best deal in town. If you want to think of the nation state of town. The number to call toll-free 24 hours a day is 1-800-562-6438. That's 1-800-562-6438. Absolutely Fresh Flowers. Hard water. It's a big problem here in Barump. It's a big problem everywhere. I don't care where you are. If you've got hard water, you've got problems. You're paying more than you have to just to heat the water. Putting up with decreased water pressure, poor sudsing, and you've got that ugly white stuff everywhere. Got your faucets, plugging your shower head and that unending toilet bowl ring. Well, my wife and I don't have that problem anymore. About a year and a half ago, we had GMX water conditioning installed in our home. No salt, no filters, no electricity, no maintenance, no hidden ongoing costs. Our water no longer feels hard, and yet all the healthy minerals are still in it. Scientists call it magnetohydrodynamics, a big word for a simple process. GMX even dissolves the scaling you already have in all for just $600. Comes with a 90-day, no-hassle, money-back guarantee. Lifetime warranty, so how can you go wrong? Get ready for water that doesn't feel hard. Just call 1-800-4060-GMX and order today. You won't be sorry. That number is 1-800-4060-GMX. All right, vacation from politics tonight, folks. Besides a lot of what we're talking about this night, this morning,
transcends the near-term political fracas going on in the country. We'll get back to that in due time. Mr. Bell, I recently downloaded your video program, and it works great. By the way, I recently visited the Reno area, and on the news, they were talking about Mono Lake and a possible volcanic eruption. Could you please ask Charles what he thinks? So I'm asking Charles.
Yeah, this is the same thing with Mammoth Lake.
Mammoth Lake. Mono
is just up the hill from Mammoth. So, and again, it's what we talked about earlier was the activity surges or earthquake swarms, micro-earthquake swarms like they had at Mammoth is not uncommon. And so they received five magnitude threes, or a couple dozen magnitude twos, and about 200 magnitude ones.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was a little robust sequence, but it petered out, and it surged again. I think I saw on the listing for a couple more threes that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
But it's usually related to hydrothermal fluids, like hot water, circulating because of the magma source. And but the instruments do show that there are tectonic movements still going on. There's swelling of the caldera.
Swelling is bad.
Swelling is okay.
Okay.
Swelling is good as long as you get the little earthquakes that relieve the stress with swelling. And so the pop-pop...
But kind of like a pressure cooker. You want to have that valve up on top relieving the pressure, and when it doesn't, then nothing much is going to happen for a while. But then all of a sudden your kitchen's going to be a real disaster.
That's correct. Right, when you run out of water.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. So what's been concerning scientists at the Mammoth Lake there is that there has not been a significant number of large or moderate quakes. Well, I mean, not large, but moderate quakes, like threes and fours to relieve that tectonic strain. And so it's been relatively quiet from August till about now. And so this burst, this recent surge that we had, it's a good thing to see. It relieves some stress, but more needs to be relieved. So.
All right, here's another one for you, and then back to the phone. Can your guest give any information on the Hayward Fault in Northern California? It's supposedly overdue for a big one. This comes from Mark listening to KSFO, which happens to be in San Francisco, so you see the reason for the concern.
I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area originally. I'm from a little town called Arinda over at Berkeley Hills, where all the FFO people down there. I attended a conference down there last February 95, on the implications of a 7.2 earthquake on the northern Hayward Fault, which is from Richmond down to Hayward.
Yes.
And it was devastating. There was a guy that just captured my attention when he went from slide to slide to slide that said, this building will come down, this building will come down, this building will come down, and on and on and on it went. The landslides, the liquefaction, which is when the ground shakes, like it turns to like quicksand and it drops, it loses its supporting strength and things sink into it.
Mm.
The Oakland Bayfront is full of that. They saw that in the Embarcadero Freeway that collapsed. That was the main reason. It was poorly founded. In Bay Mud, and there'll be a lot of damage if that quake happens. Now, hopefully, they'll get some designer quakes, and that's what we call is magnitude five, five and a half, upper fives that will get people alert and ready, before the big one hits.
What's the state of the art aside from people like Gordon? I know there are a lot of ongoing experiments in California in trying to predict earthquakes. And every now and then, you will hear a prediction made by a scientist or somebody of your caliber that has been made as a result of measurements that have been taken, and probably their hit rate is about as good as Gordon's, it seems like. But they're doing it from a scientific, purely scientific point of view. What's the state of the art? Are we going to eventually be able to predict earthquakes?
It is my guess that we will. I think there's some real neat stuff coming out. I think that...